American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, March 18th, 2005. This is Newsreel, your source for independent media and news that will give you the edge against the corporate political tyranny that is trying to enslave you. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. That can be found at Sean_Kennedy, S-E-A-N, by the way, Sean_Kennedy.livejournal.com. And you'll only be time to turn the page when you hear me say, remember, if it's not Sunni, it's Shiite. This is a free radio broadcast that can be heard on the Rent Radio and Music Box Network. Music Box Network. That's where it is. And if you are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. If you'd like to hear this program rebroadcast through your favorite station, please contact your station and tell them why. I got a little bit of feedback here right off the top, something I'm really pleased about. Now, I love getting busted up emails from people who don't know how to speak English very well because it just cracks me up. And Henry Rollins was talking about that one of his shows one time, and I heard him say that, and I thought, yeah, you know, you're probably right. And he sure was, you know. Listen to this one here. Hi, I'm Rodrigo. My English, and the spelling here is just great, is so-so. About your program is so good, very good. I see via internet. I'm from Chile, Sudamerica. We need a map, dude. Sam, we need to get a map up on the Rant Radio page or somewhere so that we can, like, have little, like, beacons and stuff to all these countries we're getting, just getting listeners in. Because I think that's great. I love getting these kind of emails. So, you know, yeah, I'm a little puffy-chested. That's cool. I love getting email like that. It just, you know, makes me feel great. So that's the only feedback I got, though. So much for that. But, you know, hey, that's good enough for me. On to the sort yourself out. Dear Sean, I love your show, and I'm a big fan. I noticed the control the government has as I have moved very close to Washington, D.C. from the West Coast. Keep it up. Now for my question. As a male, I've been subjected to pornography and sexual advertisements. I've noticed that I have developed an addiction to porn and lost control to a degree of my life and wish to regain it. What advice do you have for someone like me? Now, obviously, I'm not giving out this guy's name, so don't even ask. It's kind of like one of those questions, you know. The unsung, you know, I get all the good ones, don't I? You know, here on Sort Yourself Out, I get, like, you know, the transgender people. I get it all, you know. And I'm this, you know, white conservative, you know, kind of guy. I suppose, well, I don't know if you call me conservative. I mean, none of the conservatives will call me conservative, I'll tell you that. But I'm probably a fairly, am I a conservative? Because I believe in a lot of change. It's just like we have to. I'm a realist. You know, I probably think of myself as being, I know a lot of liberals would think I'm pretty conservative, so whatever. But, you know, to ask me a question like this, you know, yeah, we all watch porn. You know, everybody's got porn. Let's be real here. Everybody's got pornography on their computer. So how do you know if you've got a problem with porn, and is there such thing as a pornography problem? You know, I guess if you can function, you know, in day-to-day life, and when you're not... You know, doing your daily thing, and if you're, like, jerking off all the time, then I think, yeah, you've probably got a problem there. So how do you solve this problem? It would seem to me that the number one advice I would give is stop jerking off. That would be the first, you know, and foremost piece of advice would be to stop doing that. If it means going to taking a shower or, you know, going to some public place or having a coffee shop nearby where, you know, you don't have a place to go jerk off or whatever the hell. That would be, you know, I don't really know if there's, like, what is there, like a 12-step recovery program for porn or what? I don't know. I looked around on the web, you know. Seriously, I did. I looked around on the web about this, and apparently there's all kinds of websites out there for people who claim they're addicted to porn. What a twisted concept. Could you imagine being addicted to porn? Like, well, you're breaking into cars to buy DVDs and shit. Now, I don't agree with addicted to porn. I'm sorry, I don't. It's a choice, right? There's no, like, an addiction is a thing where, you know, like, if you're hooked on morphine or something like that, and if you quit the morphine all of a sudden, you know, you see spiders crawling down the walls, and you stand a chance of dying. That's an addiction, you know what I mean? Something, and of course, like smoking. Smoking's an addiction. Sure, yeah, I'll go with that because it has, you know, real side effects. But, you know, if you're addicted to porn, and, okay, and what we're talking about here, there's two things. First of all, you can't be addicted to a TV show, okay? You can't be addicted to a TV show. You can, like, we would say, like, how do you treat being addicted for Star Trek? What we're talking about here, and what we're not really saying, I'm thinking that this guy's saying, is that he's jerking off all the time watching porn. If he was just watching porn by itself, which is, you know, not very mentally stimulating whatsoever, you only watch porn when you jerk off, I imagine. So, or maybe there's people, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe there's people out there who actually just sit back and watch porn. Just porn, more porn without jerking off. Maybe there's people like that. I can't imagine that's the case, but, you know, let's be real here. So, you know, trying to get to the bottom of this question. It seems to me that the only way you're going to be able to stop this dude would be to, well, you know, you could delete all your porn, but then what happens is you feel like you've set up a barrier and you set yourself up to fall. There's a bunch of psychological reasons not to do that. Okay, so what you could do is I would just, you know, cut back. Just, you know, try to get control of it, I guess. Maybe if you're jerking off like 20 times a day, find out that you're, you know, jerking off 20 times and only try to jerk off 10 times, maybe pace it down to like once a day and then, you know, once every 4 days or whatever you want to be at. You have to determine where you want to be with this whole jerking off thing. So that would be the advice I would have for someone like you. Beyond that, man, I don't know. That's the best I can do at this stage of the game. Moving right past that, onto some new and revolutionary science. Remember we were talking about what they said was the star in the jar, something I've decided to coin the phrase star jar technology. You like that? It's pretty good. Well, so what this guy was this dude used harmonics to, you know, on these, I couldn't remember how it works, but he uses sound, in effect, on these chemicals and all this stuff, and ionized gas, blah, and he puts this little star in a jar, and everyone decried this guy as a fraud. Well, there was, no one could replicate his experiments. I can't remember his name. We covered it a few weeks ago in the Newsreel show, but check this out. There's an update on a very similar technology here. When the force of sound waves imploded tiny bubbles within a liquid at room temperature, the surface of the bubble can reach temperatures of at least 25,000 degrees Fahrenheit, more than twice as hot as the surface of the sun, scientists reported this month. Well, isn't that exactly the same goddamn thing that the other guy was doing? The center of such a bubble may even be more astonishingly hot. The scientists at University of Illinois did not speculate just how hot the bubble became, but say they had managed to create a state of matter called plasma inside the bubble. In it, some of the electrons have been stripped off the atoms. Some of the electrons had been stripped off the atoms. This is the first definitive proof of the existence of plasma. During this kind of bubble implosion, said one of the scientists, Dr. Keith S. Suslick, professor of chemistry at Illinois. Their finding supports intriguing notion that it may be possible to compress these bubbles so violently that vapor molecules in them are heated to millions of degrees of temperature. And it goes on and on and on for all you hardcore science geeks out there. Now, it's interesting how no one's giving this other dude credit, though, because quite obviously the other guy discovered it, and now the University of Illinois is talking about it, and there's not one reference to the other tech. So it kind of makes me go, well, nice, I just watched scientific ripoffs in action. That's what we just saw right there. Kind of sad, you know, that scientists fuck each other over like that, but I guess, you know, everyone's out there to make a buck and pump up their reputation. I mean, this is what they do, right? Okay, moving on to the Dutch crackdown. Amsterdam in the Netherlands, which is, you know, great part of town. Five major Dutch internet providers agreed Monday to cooperate in a crackdown in illegal file sharing, saying they will send warnings to clients suspected of swapping copyrighted music, film, and software files. The providers said they will forward letters from the Brain Institute, which represents the entertainment industry in the Netherlands. The Brain Institute, crazy name. Warning clients that sharing copyright material is against the law. Dun, dun, dun. Here's the letter. You get the letter, you turn it off. The decision was a compromise because the provider's refusal to reveal customers' names or addresses directly to the Brain Institute. Well, good for them. This is a service, a warning to clients that they are doing things that is against the law, said Meek Sloten, spokeswoman for, spokeswoman for the providers of Hetnet and Planet Internet, two of the five internet providers. Sloten said the company's hope the warnings will dampen illegal file sharing and prevent their customers from ending up in court. Well, yeah, I'd probably get freaked right the fuck out if I got a letter in the mail saying, guess what? You know what? You're file sharing. Why don't you stop file sharing or we're going to sue you through the fucking floor. Honestly, you know, when push comes to shove, I'd probably stop file sharing. In December 2003, the Dutch Supreme Court set an international precedent by ruling that software used to share files was legal. So they've got that. The Dutch Supreme Court, file sharing programs are legal in Holland. We know that. But it didn't rule out that individuals could be prosecuted. Well, yeah, they're sharing files. So the act of file sharing is not illegal, whereas file sharing copyrighted material is. So that's fine. That's fine. I think that that's smart. Once again, you know, to me, it seems like they didn't turn in their people. They just sent letters of warning. So, man, I might be moving to Holland, really. I mean, it's a nice town. Now, for those of you out there in the black market land looking in the fake ID, looks like you're going to get a good chance to get some Nevada fake ID, which should be hitting the streets sometime soon. Authorities fear identity thieves could trigger a crime spree using roughly 1,700 blank driver's licenses stolen early Monday from a Nevada Department of Motor Vehicles office in North Las Vegas. Well, obviously, they're making fake ID, but I don't think you'll see a crime spree from it because they'll probably sell these for $500 a crack or $1,000 a crack, wherever the hell they're going to sell them for. The blank licenses without laminated covers and license-making equipment were taken after a truck was rammed into the Department of Motor Vehicles office at 411 Donovan Way shortly before 1 a.m. They targeted all the stuff they needed to make IDs, said Tim Bedwell, a North Las Vegas Police Department spokesman. The potential of what they can do with it runs the gamut, from ID theft to check fraud, anything they want to do with it. The robbers smashed through a 9-foot by 10-foot double-paned break room window in the facility's rear, which leads to the bureau's back counter area. It was very quick. They were in and out in under 20 minutes, said Kevin Malone, DMV spokesman. Evidently, they loaded up with equipment and drove off with it. 20 minutes? Jesus. They were in and out of here in under 20 minutes. Christ, I could go to 7-Eleven, go buy a coffee, read a magazine, and leave in 20 minutes. That's not fast. Fast is like under 5 minutes. You mean to tell me that the Department of Motor Vehicles got hit and it took the cops like 20 minutes to get there? Jesus, that's really sad. In addition to the blank licenses and laminated covers, thieves took a digital license camera, a camera computer, I guess it must be a very specific computer, and a license printer. Malone said they seemed to know what they were taking. Oh, geez, you think? So I don't know what the price of fake ID is for in Nevada. Can someone get me that, please? I'd like to find out what that is. What's a good fake ID go for these days? And, you know, and you got 1,700 of them, so yeah, they probably brought in a pretty good haul there. So chances are, next little while, if you see some Nevada ID on the market, you know where it came from. And it's time to bite the bullet. We've all known that it would be a really good idea to filter our water. We all know that, but we don't. And why don't we filter our water? I don't know, because we're lazy? Because we all just think, you know, Brita's actually does something? No, dude, we need to look into. There's got to be a way that if you're in a stable location and you got a fixed place you're hunkering down at, you need to start filtering your water, put in a water filtration system, or there's some pretty elaborate stuff you can do, but we got to start cleaning our water. Why? Because ever since the advent of modern plumbing, people have embraced a practice of flush and forget. Unfortunately, public works employees and clean water advocates rarely enjoy such luxury. And recent debates has focused in the final step in sewage processing, chlorine disinfection, which is no longer the foregone conclusion it once was. Chlorine disinfection kills pathogenic bacteria, so people swimming or fishing near treatment plants, discharge locations don't contact cholera, E. coli infection, Legionnaire's disease, or other illnesses that come from drinking other people's poop. The practice still widespread, and chlorine remains the most widely used disinfectant at 16,000 wastewater treatment plants nationwide, according to John Millett, a spokesman for the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. However, the toxicity of chlorine that kills harmful bacteria also hurts other life. And while the EPA says treatment plants must dechlorinate before spewing out the treated wastewater, that the affluent that is not pure, the shit that's left over, it contains dechlorinated byproducts, colloquially referred to as DBPs, which are considered to be carcinogenic. Well, that's great. So they're taking the crap, they're filtering it, and that which that isn't killed, now not only is it shit, but it's carcinogenic shit. The chemical process might cause more problems in the environment than if you didn't do it at all, said Tom Fraza, assistant general manager of Wastewater Enterprises for the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission, or the SFPUC. SPUC. That's what it says to me, SPUC. So scientifically, it's controversial. But the regulators take the approach that since we're not sure, let's chlorinate. Well, I'm always a big fan of, like, not poisoning the water, you know, because water is important, you know, it's a big part of my life, and I don't think we should really be pumping massive amounts of chlorine into the water. As a matter of fact, didn't we use that on the soldiers of the enemy in the Second World War? You know, chlorine gas, wasn't that all part of it there? And the stuff that was used to kill the soldiers, we're now, like, putting in our water over and over and over again because there's a finite amount of water in the world, and I don't know. Looks like we're really doing a number here. So I think that maybe we should look at that. Just sort of a personal sideline. And also on the environmental front, you'd think that there'd be a lot of electric cars in the news. And there are. But unfortunately, I've got a story where they're being destroyed, which makes me kind of go, what the fuck? And a Baywatch actress, Alexandra Paul. Kind of problem with that name there. And another woman were arrested Monday after blocking the path of trucks hauling GM's pioneering EV1 electric cars to Arizona to be destroyed. So they've, I guess, officers booked Colette Devine and Paul, who plays Lieutenant Stephen Holden on the TV series Baywatch, on suspicion of failing to obey an officer. Police Lieutenant William Berry said the women, both of Los Angeles, were released on their own recognizance and were to be arraigned Tuesday. The two are among dozens of electric car supporters holding an around-the-clock vigil outside the German Motors Corp training center in Burbank, where more than 70 EV1s had been stored en route to a cycling plant near Mesa, Arizona. General Motors has declined the group's offer to pay a total of $1.9 million for 70 vehicles. So we've got you've got $2 million offered up for, what is that, 50 cars? So 70 cars for $2 million? Wow, that's, I don't know, what does that break down to? I'd have to do the math on that. But that seems like a pretty fair offer, especially for something you're going to crush anyway, because I guarantee you they're not going to get $2 million out of crushing the cars. So why would they not sell the cars for $2 million? Police said Paul and Devine were in a car that blocked the center's driveway for 2 hours. As the trucks loaded with EV1s were attempting to leave, they refused to move despite the police orders to do so. 4 trucks hauled away 28 EV1s after the driveway was cleared, GM spokesman Dave Barthma said. Our goal is not to have anyone arrested, he said. We respect the beliefs, but we have to be allowed to do business and carry out our business decisions as would any company. The company said the cars never became popular enough to turn a profit, and that they must be destroyed because there isn't a large enough supply of the car's 2,000 parts. That can make the vehicles unsafe and lead to lawsuits, GM contends. But still, 70 cars, like, I don't care what they're going to get for these cars crushing them. They're not going to get $2 million out of them. I don't give a shit what they do with them. If they're just going to crush them, why didn't they just sell the cars? What a weird thing to do. I guess they didn't want the technology on the market, right? I mean, you know, if you're going to be abandoning that because you think it sucks and you're just going to stick with oil, okay, whatever. But why not just sell them? That really is a good example of a large multinational corporation not giving a shit whatsoever what anyone else thinks and making decisions, you know, that, like, if you were to be offered $2 million for scrap, wouldn't you take it? I mean, think about it. Crazy. And, of course, we've got some vitamin vilification. Now, anytime you'll notice that anybody ever finds anything wrong with any vitamin, it always makes huge news. Huge amounts of fucking news because they want to vilify vitamins. This is a big goal of a lot of pharmaceutical companies, right? We want to make sure that everyone thinks the vitamins are bad, so they stop taking vitamins and then they can pay us more money to take our drugs because it's better if the peasants are sick. Vitamin E does not prevent heart attacks and cancer and can actually be harmful when taken in large doses, as top medical journal says. Yeah, well, no shit. Now, that's a very misleading statement because if you take vitamin E in large doses, yeah, well, you take anything in large doses, you're going to have problems. A 7-year study of thousands of patients with heart disease and diabetes, researchers found that not only did vitamin E supplements fail to prevent heart attacks and cancer, but they may actually increase the risk of heart failure. They may actually increase the risk. There's a great string of words. They might actually increase the risk. Increase the risk. They don't cause them. They increase the risk. And it maybe increases the risk. In conjunction with its lack of efficiency, the potential for harm suggested by our findings strongly supports the view that vitamin E supplements should not be used in patients with vascular disease or diabetes, wrote lead researcher Dr. Evan Lawn of the Population Health Research Institute at McMaster's University in Hamilton, Canada. Oh, good, a Canadian. The study was published in the Journal of American Medical Association. It involved 9,541 patients over the age of 55 and at 267 study centers in North America and Europe. Holy cow, look at those numbers. All the patients had a vascular disease or diabetes and were given each either a placebo or daily doses of 400 international uses of natural source vitamin E. I would like to know what exactly source of natural source vitamin E. Well, what does that mean? Where did you get that vitamin E from? Let's get more details. The initial study ran for just over 5 years. It was extended for a further 2 years, during which time another 4,000 patients continued the study, and 730 agreed to passive follow-up. Earlier studies in epidemiology and experimental biology had suggested that antioxidants, such as vitamin E, could prevent cell damage and the development of dangerous cancer cells. Well, okay, you like this here, how they've suddenly slapped antioxidants in with the vitamin E? It also just suggested that antioxidants could reduce the buildup of cholesterol in arterial walls. Okay, why is that? What else did the survey, the other one you're quoting, say? But now you've got it in this other article, which is bullshitting vitamin E. Oh, and now it's kind of implying. You see how they do that? That's amazing. This report effectively closes the door on the prospect of a major protective effect of long-term exposure to this supplement, wrote Dr. B. Greg Brown and Dr. John Crowley in an accompanying editorial. I love the way this is written because now they've slapped antioxidants in with vitamin E, and then they don't talk about vitamin E so much in the rest of the article, so it kind of leads you to believe that antioxidants are all bullshit too. You like how they do that? Fuck, man, these guys aren't stupid, I'll tell ya. They're just going to try to vilify the living snot out of all the nutrients that we can possibly get. No, don't take vitamins, for God's sakes. For God's sakes, don't have vitamins. What are you thinking? Vitamins? They'll kill ya, those fucking things. For all, you know, what you got to do is you got to take more of this, labeled, branded, reconstituted, chemically produced stuff. Because after all, that's what, you know, we had back in the day. We've always eaten chemicals. There's nothing been but chemicals. Thank God for technology. That's what these people are on about. Very sick, very weird. I don't know, really, how these people can sleep at night. Of course, then again, you know, the animal activists could look at me and saying, you know, look at all the suffering you cause. You know, maybe it seems to me kind of bizarre, though, because this is, like, this could be killing people. These kind of, you're not making sick people sicker or maintaining their sickness. You're actually making well people sick by telling them not to take vitamins and to call down antioxidants. I mean, that's pretty evil. You know, that's an evil thing to do. You know, you better hope there's nothing happening after death. Now, speaking of the guys worried about what happens to you after you die, now we have a legislation introduced. This is a great story. For protection of the gay unborn. Maine State Representative Brian Dupree introduced an unusual piece of legislation this month. It is a pro-life bill designed to tighten protections for the unborn. That's not the unusual part. This happens all the time. The interesting part is that Dupree's bill is designed to protect gay fetuses. Republican Dupree told the local people, the Magic City Morning Star, wow, that he'd been listening to Rush Limbaugh's radio show, and Limbaugh commented that scientists ever located the genetic cause for homosexuality, the so-called gay genes, and homosexuals would become pro-life overnight. I don't really see how those two would go together. Most people would agree that to kill someone just because that person might be gay would constitute a hate crime. I think if you kill anyone for any reason, it comes out as a crime, Dupree said. Well, he didn't say that. I say that, but that's what Dupree said. I heard it from women who told me that if they found they were carrying a child with a gay gene, they would abort. Wow, that's some hateful shit going on there. You wouldn't want to give those women's name out because, I mean, it's their body, but it seems kind of hateful to me, but whatever. I think this is wrong. Those unborn children should be protected. That's why he's introduced LD 908, an act to protect homosexuals from discrimination. Now, I don't know if Dupree's on the up and up with this. I don't even know if he's against abortions for straight babies, and I doubt he will ever find anything like a gay gene. Still, his stunt auto-provokes a much-needed reflection about technology, ideology, and human society. So, just so we know how the Sean Kennedy feels about this, I think this law is bad. I don't care if the thing growing inside of, if I happened to be a woman, you know, and I had something alive inside of me that I didn't want to be there, I wouldn't care if it was gay, straight, you know, divinely inspired or whatever. I'd be breaking out, you know, the necessary equipment to get that shit gone. You know, that's just me. So I'm a big pro-choice person. You know, the way I see it, it's just like, sorry, man. You know, sometimes these things got to happen. We're in a crazy world, and I'm all about choice because logic is really the only tool we have against, you know, total and complete chaos. So you should be able to enforce your will upon reality when in regards to your body. That's just me. You know, that's where I stand on that. So there it is, and obviously this is yet another example of people using legal means to try to, you know, bring in religious legislation, which is just, you know, fantastic. And another good news, President George Bush, our favorite person in the world, has nominated U.S. Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz as the next head of the World Bank, a key development agency. Well, you know, the news just keeps coming, eh? Mr. Wolfowitz, who's 61, Jesus, these are old men, eh? Like, realistically, dude, shouldn't you be, like, you know, playing golf or drinking little teas or something somewhere? You're 61! What are you doing? You know, now you're going to be, oh, I'm 61 years old and I'm going to be the great evil powers of the world? Aren't you planning on playing shuffleboard or something at that age? But anyway, Mr. Wolfowitz, who's 61, has earned a reputation as a neoconservative hawk during his time at the Pentagon and was a strong advocate in the Iraq War. Oh, good, good, good. Mr. Wolfowitz, described by Mr. Bush as compassionate and decent man, said he relished the agency's noble mission. A bank with a noble mission. Wow, frightening. Reaction was divided with praise and strident criticism of the nomination. A British-based campaign group, the World Development Movement, described the nominee as truly terrifying appointment. Joseph Stiglitz, Nobel Prize winner and former chief economist at the World Bank, also criticized Mr. Wolfowitz's nomination. So the guy, okay, a Nobel Prize-winning economist, the former chief economist of the World Bank, looks at the incoming guy and goes, choosing the right general in a war against poverty will not assure victory, but choosing the wrong one surely increases the chances of failure. This is what he says. And quite honestly, you know, if you've got that kind of feedback coming in from a nomination, let's just hope that nomination doesn't go all the way through. Maybe it isn't really a nomination. Maybe it's the announcement of an appointment. I'm hoping, is this something gets voted on, you know? But apparently, you know, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, who was the head economist of the fucking World Bank, has said, wow, is that ever a stupid motherfucker to have in charge? That's got to tell you something right there. You don't get that kind of feedback every day. Now, here's a story which, you know, I want to talk about this story. This is death as a spectator sport. An Iranian serial killer, who's a piece of shit, granted, an Iranian serial killer who murdered at least 20 children has been executed in front of a large crowd of spectators. Okay, now hear this out. Mohammed Bija, Mohammed Bija, who's a shithead, who's 24, dubbed the Tehran Desert Vampire by Iran's press, was flogged 100 times before being hanged. A brother, and for the record, isn't it being hung? Or is it hanged? Is hanged actually like a word? Is it hanged or hung? I've always wondered about that. A brother of one of his young victims stabbed him while he was being punished. The mother of another one of the victims was asked to put a noose around his neck. The execution took place in Pakdasht, south of Tehran, where Bing's year-long killing spree took place. The killer was hoisted about 10 meters into the air by a crane and slowly throttled to death in front of a baying crowd. Hanging by a crane, a common form of execution in Iran, does not involve a swift death, as the condemned prisoner's neck is not broken. The killer collapsed twice throughout this punishment, although he remained calm and silent throughout. Spectators, held back by barbed wire and about 100 cops, chanted, "Harder! Harder!" as judicial officials took turn to flog Bey's bare back before his hanging. Bey was stabbed by the 17-year-old brother of the victim, Rahim Noshi. So they got a 17-year-old child. I shouldn't really call him a child because there's 17-year-olds listening right now. There's a 17-year-old boy who is stabbing a man being flogged. Okay. But because he was the brother of the victim, Rahim Yoshini, AFP reported, he was also, as he was being ready to be hanged. So as the guy, as they were putting the noose around his neck and stuff after being flogged, the guy walked up and shanked him. Officials then invited Milad Kenhani to put a blue nylon rope around his neck. She probably was overcome because they didn't say she did that. They say they invited her to do that, but I guess she didn't. Now, you'd ask, now let's bear in mind what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a serial killer who geeked 20 kids. He dragged them out into the desert. He lured them out into the desert to go hunting, I guess was his, his ploy. You know, come help me look for this little dog or whatever. Feeds them some poison. So they get all drugged out and then, you know, nails them in the keister a bunch of times, fucks them up, and then kills them in the desert. That's, you know, yeah, without a doubt, you bet, 39-cent solution for that guy. You know, I dropped the hammer on him myself, personally. You know, no problem here. Now, the problem is, though, that that kind of public execution right there, the purpose of a public execution is to show your people, the people in the land there, as it's a deterrent is what it's supposed to be. It's don't do this. Because, you know, you'll get killed, this guy did this, and we're doing this to him, so don't you do it. That's the whole purpose of a public execution. Now, what this was not a public execution. This was like, can you imagine how violent that culture must be? Jesus Christ, you know, to walk up to somebody and shiv them like that, you know, and to encourage it. You know, I think that the guy should have been killed. You know, but when I talk about the death penalty and stuff like that, I'm not a big fan of suffering. You know, this dude who did this, he's fucked up. He's FUBAR. He can't be fixed. His brain's all wired wrong. Okay. So what you do is you check him out in the cheapest, most effective, painless way possible. If that means that, you know, you take a shotgun shell to the back of his head and you have a little assembly line machine do it, you know, and costs, you know, 40 cents or whatever to blow somebody's head clean off. And it's a quick death, you know, no pain. Have, you know, monitor a couple bodies, make sure that it's like just like turning off a light switch, you know, that'd be it. I don't think that the guy should be made to suffer. Now, the reason why they do that is to get closure. This is one of the arguments for people who advocate this kind of, you know, showiness of execution, where they say, well, you know, if the families, they need a sense of closure. So, you know, if their child is there, they want to be able to stick the knife in the guy, you know, because then that'll make them feel better. Well, no, that doesn't make you feel better. That's a very damaging thing to do to the human psyche. To be involved in the murder of someone is a very, very damaging thing to the human psyche. And don't think for a minute, like, everyone likes to talk shit on the internet. You know, guys are all like, oh, I'll skin them from eyeball to asshole and all the rest of it, you know? And they say that as a metaphor, you know? That's not, they're not really serious. They're not actually implying they're going to skin this guy from eyeball to asshole. But they just say that because that's, you know, we all are pretty desensitized. You gotta come up with more extreme stuff to say, you know, I really don't like him. I'd get violent around him. But realistically, is there a point to mutilating somebody who's a criminal before you kill him? You'd think you'd want to. But you get a hold of, like, Joseph Mengele, right? He was a blue-eyed angel of death, did medical experiments, Nazi. He's just a fucking monster, okay? The guy was a fucking monster. And he died walking on a beach in Argentina. You know, he had a long, full life and then died. One of those really, really horrible stories that no one ever got any kind of vengeance on the guy. So you look at that and you think, fuck, man, you know, we got to get vengeance on this person, you know? No. The guy was a psycho. And he was doing something that he believed in, although it was sick, deranged, and wrong. You're not going to change him. You're not going to rehabilitate the guy. So the only thing you can do is turn him off. And there's no way you could ever impart the kind of suffering onto him that he caused other people. It just can't be done. He doesn't have enough. There's not enough nerves in the body to receive that kind of suffering. His brain would snap long before then. So, I mean, Jesus, the camp snapped everybody's brain. So this, how do you punish someone like that? You can't. There's no way. And guys like this, he killed at least 20 children. They think he killed more. So, you know, there's no repaying the anguish of that. Every time a child dies, the mother's just about to commit suicide. It fucking kills them. You think a mother could take 20 of them? No. So there's no way you could ever repay this guy the kind of agony. Even what he did there, that's fuck all compared to what those mothers were going through. So what's the positive of a public execution like this? And don't think for a minute that the governments over there don't know this stuff. You know, they're not a barbaric government. These people are highly educated. This is what people can be made to do, to get this savage, this base, You know, and that's what happens when literacy falls by the wayside and religion starts taking over. This is exactly the kind of world. I don't want to live in a world where that shit happens. Okay, that's fucking, that's twisted. You know, yeah, the guy needed to be checked out, but to make a show of it like that? Fucking deranged, man. There's something wrong with you people. But, you know, I guess that's how they do things in Iran. So, if you like a country that's run by religious conviction, go check out Iran. Now, here's some cool stories to go with these horrible ones I've been giving you here. Apparently, a world's first purpose-built hydrogen-powered bike, like a motorcycle, could be fitted with an artificial vroom because it worries its silence might be dangerous. Now, check this out. Not only did they make a hydrogen-powered bike, but the fucking thing is so quiet that they have to make it make noise. Otherwise, you know, they're afraid that it would just be, you know, would be a trouble for pedestrians, which I think is fantastic. My God, I'd love to get one of these. Is that quiet? Could you imagine this for military applications? Wow. A prototype of the motorbike, which would cost more than $8,300, was unveiled in London on Tuesday. So if it hit the street, it'd be $8,000 for one of these motorbikes. The problem with the fuel cell bike, which produces no pollution emissions, is that it's too quiet. But the anti-noise campaigners say they welcome the prospect of a motorbike without the usual excruciating roar. For their part, manufacturer says a fake engine noise device, which could be switched off, would help alert road users. Okay, well, that's cool. The motorbike, known as the Emissions Neutral Vehicle, ENV, has a top speed of 50 miles per hour. Ooh, that's pretty gutless. And a range of at least 100 miles, also gutless. It can run continuously for over 4 hours before the fuel cell needs recharging. Again, gutless. It's a water vapor emissions are so clean that they are drinkable, according to its designers. Well, great. You're driving around a water cooler because it's not much of a bike. But with a noise emission equivalent to an everyday home computer, motorcycle enthusiasts thought the exhilaration factor was missing. They can add all the noise they want, but it still will lack the va-va-va-voom seriousness motorcyclists look for. Okay. I like to think that I consider myself to be a motorcycle fan. I don't actually give a shit what kind of noise it makes. I'm looking for performance. So, yeah, this is really weak. Jeff Stone of the British Motorcyclist Federation told the BBC, concerns were raised that the motorcycle was too silent. They might not be noticed by traffic and other pedestrians. So it sounds like a good idea in theory, but I can't really see some real use for this thing. But so that's okay. It doesn't really matter because I have found the new hotness. Yes, I was really happy, and mad props to Soeb for sending me this, because this is the sexiest. What happens if you cross a gyrocopter with a car and a motorbike? The PALV, P-A-L-V, Personal Air and Land Vehicle, a solution to increasing congestion in our city's highways and skyways. On the ground, the slimline aerodynamic three-wheeled vehicle is comfortable as a luxury car, but has the agility of a motorbike thanks to its patent cutting-edge tilting system. The single rotor and propeller are folded away until the PALV is ready to fly. I swear to God, this thing looks like something on a mask, okay? Airborne, the PALV flies under the 4,000-foot, 1,500-meter floor of commercial airspace. With land and airspace reaching capacity, this is some of the last free space. The PALV is a highly fuel-efficient and powered by a certified car engine. By an environmentally certified car engine. It runs on petrol like a conventional car and can reach speeds up to 200 kilometers an hour both in land and in the air. I swear to God, man. Its straightforward auto-gyro flying technology means the PALV is economically and technically feasible in comparison to other forms of air travel. Like a helicopter, it has a very short takeoff and vertical landing, VSTOVL, capability, making it possible to land practically anywhere. It can be driven to the nearest airfield or a helipad, and because it flies below the 4,000 feet, can take off without filing a flight plan. So you just go to the airport, take off, and you don't have to file a flight plan. The auto-gyro technology means it can be steered and landed safely, even if the engine fails and descends vertically rather than nosediving. Lift is generated by the forward speed produced by a foldable push propeller on the back. If less than 70 decibels, it is much quieter than a helicopter due to the slower rotating of the main rotor. A license to fly the PALV is more accessible than one for a helicopter or a plane because the regulation controlling of an autogyro craft. In the United States and soon in Europe, the infrastructure is in place for digital freeways that provide safe corridors using GPS technology to aid regulation and avoid collisions for low-flying vehicles. Okay, now, I'm so fucking horny for one of these things. I swear to God, if someone can get me a price on one of these, I will buy one. I will do whatever it takes to get one because this thing is hot. Here's some specs. Its top speed on the ground is 200 kilometers an hour. Air max speed is 195 kilometers an hour. Okay, it does 0 to 100 kilometers an hour in less than 5 seconds. Its minimum air speed is 30 kilometers an hour. It needs 50 meters to take off, and it has an estimated fuel economy while you're driving at 30 clicks per liter. It has a range of 600 kilometers on the ground and 550 kilometers in the air. You got to check this thing out. Now, calling all Dutchmen, if someone can get me a price, I will buy it. I'm not kidding. This is an article from 2004. I don't know how, but I will swing that shit. That is the hottest thing. That is single-handedly some of the sweetest tech I have seen in a long... It's the flying fucking car. Not only that, it looks like a full-faring Akira bike, man. The thing is sex. I hope this isn't a hoax. It doesn't appear to be a hoax. I tried to find it. But baby, do I want one of these things. Huh. Hot. Now, it's a shame that leaving that amazingly sexual story, I have to go to this really sad story about Drink or Die. Anybody who's been around the block for a little while knows of Drink or Die. Well, looks like they got fucked hard. Drink or Die got busted. Two men who are part of a huge network of internet software pirates known as Drink or Die. And these guys go way back, man. These guys get mad props back in the day. They've been convicted of conspiracy to defraud. Alex Bell, who's 32, of Grays, Essex, and Stephen Dowd, 42, of Newton Le Willows, Merseyside, were among 60 members of the Drink or Die network arrested. They denied downloading software for profit after being arrested in a U.S.-led operation and will be sentenced in May. The Department of Defense members did not make any the Drink or Die members did not make any profit, but police denied that they were Robin Hoods. Well, if they just circulated software and gave it away for free... They weren't Robin Hoods, though. Yeah, they fucking were. Be it right, be it wrong, for all you Ayn Rand friends, all you Ayn Rand people out there. Be it right, be it wrong, these motherfuckers were Robin Hood. They were among the 8 Britons arrested in the National High-Tech Crime Unit in December of 2001. Detective Kevin Brownless is one of those who led the inquiry in Britain, said it was wrong to think of the Drink or Die as Robin Hoods, stealing software from big corporations and distributing it for free on the internet, which is exactly what the fuck they did. That is exactly what they did. They took software, be it right, be it wrong. Okay, let's cut the shit here. They took from these really rich corporations, they took their software, opened it up, and gave it away for free to mostly kids who couldn't afford it because they wanted to learn. And they've been hung for it. So, you can look at that and take what you want from it, I guess. You can say, well, you know, I think that Drink or Die, I think they're heroes. Personally, yeah, I'll come out and say, fucking rights they are. Drink or Die is heroes, and it's sad that they got nailed for it. But that's the price you pay. You know, if you can't stand the heat, you better get out of the kitchen. Because it's not all just, you know, ooh, I'm elite hacksaw now. Now free speech is going to cost us. Now people are going to start to bleed for it. People like that, Drink or Die. You know, maybe they were breaking the law. I don't think they're immoral, though. I don't think they're criminals. You know, and when the great judgment comes for those guys, I hope they're listed amongst the heroes, because that's a shame. It's a shame. So, also, you remember a long while ago, I was talking about Operation Honeynet? It's one of these big, tech, you know, out to get the hackers, us evil terrorists out there on the web here. So I got an update from these guys. Fake zombie computer spies are infiltrating zombie networks and recording online exchanges between networks and their human commanders. The fake zombies... Well, the fake replicant zombies? Like, what would you call those? A fake zombie. What would that be? An zombie? Fake zombies are deployed by members of the German Honeynet project, which is starting to collect data on zombie armies. Man, you just never expect to see that kind of line. Look at it. The fake zombies are deployed by members of the German Honeynet project, which started collecting data on zombie armies in November 2004 and released the first paper detailing how to spy on zombie networks on Monday. Now, if you didn't know anything about computers and you, arrived from the year 1973 and picked up the newspaper and read that story, you'd be freaking out. With the help of HoneyNets, we can observe people who run botnets, a task that is difficult to using other techniques, says Thorsten Holtz, researchers at the RWTH at Aachen University, Germany, and founder of the German HoneyNet project. Zombies are ordinary PCs infected with a piece of malicious code known as a bot that instructs a PC to secretly log onto an online chat room and obey the instructions issued by the chat room's controller. The bot may have been deposited into the computer by a virus such as SoBig or MyDoom, downloaded from a bogus website, or instituted by a hacker directly. Holt's fake zombies have enabled him to spy on over 100 different botnets, some compromised up to 50,000 zombie computers, PCs under the control of hackers. So what would you call the hackers in charge who just set up these zombie networks? Because if you've got, like, say you've got, you know, 5,000-6,000 zombie computers, does that make you like a necromancer all with numbers? You know, I mean, it's kind of cool if you think about it, but he has noticed a new trend towards groups of smaller botnets all controlled by the same person. It's probably an attempt to make botnets more difficult to infiltrate by distributing their control over multiple servers. So this is what's going on with the HoneyNet guys. All you necromancers out there who are doing this stuff, hey, you might want to look out at that, because it looks like HoneyNet's catching some flies with all this. And how about this one? About spammers suing their victims. Now listen to this one here, Oklahoma City. Imagine asking a corporation to stop spamming you, and instead of honoring your request, it sues you and federal court continues to send you the same unwanted junk mail you asked it to stop sending in the first place. This is the time when you change your email address. This is precisely what happened to Mark W. Muma, a web hosting and email service provider in Oklahoma City. A suit was filed against Muma in U.S. District Court, Eastern District of Virginia on February 8th. By suspected spammer Cruise.com, its parent company, and the parent's principals. Muma's attorney, Richard Toika of Arlington, Virginia, based Metropolitan Legal Services, LLC, filed a motion March 15 to dismiss the case. The filing was accompanied, the case number is 05-CV-122. The filing was accompanied by a motion for sanctions against John Lawless, opposing party's counsel, and general counsel of Omega World Travel Incorporated. What a fucking bloodthirsty lawyer that son of a bitch is. The motion to dismiss is due to the blatant lack of personal jurisdiction the U.S. Court's Eastern District area of Virginia has over my company or me personally, Muma said. I asked this company to quit sending me spam. Instead of honoring my request, it continued to send me spam, even after filing suit against me in an apparent attempt to cost me money and discourage me from pursuing rightful damages under Oklahoma spam laws. It continues to send me spam. The most shocking thing about the spam today is how big and well-known companies are using spam, but after they've been caught red-handed, you think that some of these spam offenders would apologize, quit spamming, and make every possible effort to settle out of court. According to Muma, Cruise.com has never once asked him to do anything. It didn't ask him to remove any of the images or textual content from his site. It simply filed a lawsuit in court that knew it had no jurisdictional authority whatsoever. Muma explained, today's spammer tends to think it will escape prosecution because they've never been prosecuted. It has a false sense of security because nobody has come along and legally knocked it off of its high horse. Now, this is some disturbing stuff. What if this comes on a little bit further? I mean, realistically, we don't have the money to afford legal protection. Does that mean that we're going to have, like, if it's criminal court, yeah, you get legal counsel. But if you don't have the ability to have legal counsel, you can't stand up for any of your rights, and therefore you get walked on. This is a very disturbing trend. Very, very disturbing. And something that needs to be addressed, and soon. Now, on to your daily hack. This one's from NATO. Knowing that all encryption will break, you must never send sensitive info through instant messaging. And, of course, we all know of how all instant messaging is really insecure, and recently with AIM and everything. So, of course, getting off all proprietary networks is best. They're all vulnerable to this kind of shenanigans. And that's why he's talking about Jabber in an article. Nonetheless, is encryption is a good thing in its own right, no matter where you use it. Trillions Crypto only works with Trillium. No one else supports it. On the contrary, Game OTR can be used with Trillium via the localhost proxy or in any other IAM client that supports proxying. Plus, its GPL can't argue with that. It should come quickly before the standard, I think. So this was sort of a broken email that I got, but he's talking about, I've got a link there on my site about encryption you can use over instant messaging. So by all means, please check that out. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back on Monday to make sure you get all the news and information you need to stay alive. Some homework for the weekend this weekend? This weekend you have to get all your encryption up to snuff. Everybody's got to get their hard drives in order just in case somebody were to grab it and take it away. Because, you know, hey, we're paranoid. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of those willing to fight against the tyranny. They would be Anonymous, Topek, Jesse, the Great Ghost, Drake, Anthony, Robert, Jewel, Pell, Anonymous, Michael, Andrea, Derek, Jesse, Susan, Eric, Techfreak, Keith, Malcolm, Peter, Forley, Timor, Peter, Plasmonic Grid, Christopher, Rosalie, Richard, Matt, Greg, Weblife, Evan, David, Brian, Austin, Brian, Jonathan, Adam, Host Mojo, Mainframe, Mark, Jonathan, Trevor, Brandon, Helgon, Art, Diremude, Brandon, Justin, Matthew, Lars, Eric, Anonymous, and Jason. New subscribers this month were Kevin, Steve, Philip, Steve, Charles, Matt, Brandon, Kevin, and Mark. And if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the Donate tab. Special thanks to some hard netrunners who brought me the data today. Bonsai Poppy, Astrofix, Sylvanus, Wanadi, Polysci, Speaker, Falwear, Sabo, Psychofish, No Delete, Pet Show West, Joe, Forley, Duel, and Madar. Upcoming events, none to report, and I've got no digital baptisms for you either. So if you know anyone who would like to have something named, please give me an email and I will sort that out for you. And again, thanks to everyone for their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel, that's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album City Lights by The Deep Enid. And I think it's Eend or Enid. It's kind of a mess up. There's a link to it on the Live Journal page. Oh, and by the way, if someone could hook me up with the intro text from the first episode of the Standalone Complex, that would rock. Now, for those of you out there on Standalone, right in the very first episode of that whole thing, there's a big thing of text, and I'd like to know where that's from. And if someone could give me a web link to where that text is, I would really appreciate it. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
Never to come back. Go turn a deeper blue. I could not foresee this thing happening to you.